Jack and Jill here.
Hi.
Welcome to the Jack Jill Show, entertaining real estate investment advice. I'm Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about houses versus land. The number of parcels in any given county. How many houses are there? How many land parcels are there?
Yep.
This is a numbers kind of show, Jill.
Are you preparing me? Is that what the point?
Yes, I am.
Do you have some caffeine over there? Do I have some safety pins to jab in my fingers to keep me awake or something?
I don't know. Where did that come from?
I don't know. No, it came with that Carol Burnett thing I was watching.
What's that?
I don't know if I talked about that on the show or not. Because I was watching I found a Carol Burnett 50-year anniversary show, and I was... Everyone, I'm not that old. My parents watched it. So anyway, so my point is, and I just think she's cool. I still watch old stuff anyway. I think it's really cool. But so she was talking about one of the skits that she would do with Tim Conway, where he was this, he was a businessman and she was his secretary, the ditzy, had the answering, where she plugged in the stuff and wore the headset to answer the calls and all that good stuff. Mrs. Wiggins, that was her name, Mrs. Wiggins. And so she talked about how the way that they did their stuff, kind of like our show, where stuff was not really rehearsed. And even either way, Tim Conway, whatever he would rehearse was not what he would come out with.
He would, it is like our show.
Totally, right? So he would in the all the rehearsal stuff, and then he would at the live time, he would totally change it up, and how he acted, how he played things out, things he said. It was hilarious. Well, there was every time on the show, it looked like she was biting her nails. She would and we all thought it was part of the character of Mrs. Wiggins that she would be like filing her nails and then biting off a piece like of a hangnail or something. In reality, what she was doing was biting down on her finger to keep from laughing. So she was inflicting pain on herself to keep from breaking out into laughter because he was so darn funny.
Versus the pain that this show causes you to do.
So yes, so like that, if Carol Burnett had to do to keep from laughing, I will have to maybe, it was just kind of a joke that if I started to fall asleep, I could poke myself. So I won't fall asleep, Jack, you know that.
That was a... With our number three kid, we just went and got our California boat cards, to licensed boaters, and it brought me right back to sixth grade.
Oh,
right with him. I mean, we were both just making each other laugh. We had to leave the room.
Oh yeah.
We were biting on something just so we weren't laugh in front of these older, super nice.
I'm really glad I wasn't there because I would have been like the A student in the front looking back at you glaringly, quit disrupting the class. So glad I wasn't there.
Before we get into our topic, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the jackjill.com online community. It's free.
That's a nice little insight into the kind of student that you are or were.
Oh, geez.
And still, apparently still are.
What was it? Class clown. Start to finish.
Disruptive.
You were too. I know you were.
I know. But I don't do that anymore. Maybe.
What? When's the last time you sat in a class?
Oh, God.
How do you know? That was the first class I sat in 30 years.
You know, I'll tell you why. Last class I sat in was years ago in a real estate school when I was, getting all the knowledge for that. Yeah,
that makes me want to stick needles in my eyes.
Right? But I did. But no, now I'm the geek. I'm sitting up straight. I'm taking notes. I'm asking questions. I'm sitting in the front. I have become that geek. So anyway.
That's too bad.
Sorry.
I'm glad I wasn't there for that.
No, yep. There you go.
I would have made you laugh.
Oh.
Can you imagine us taking a class together?
No.
I would have sat there. I would have done everything.
No.
I would have pulled her hair.
Well, it's like every single time we're in a seminar.
You're a girl I like.
Thank you. And every time we're in a seminar or a group meeting, that's exactly what goes on. You're sitting there, writing funny things down and saying, can we go now? Can we go now? That's what you do.
We went to a podcast thing.
Oh, my gosh.
We went to a national podcast thing in Anaheim.
Conference,
and we left 2 days early. And Jill said, why?
Why do we pay for all this?
All this money.
You're like, okay, I'm done.
Like, you know what?
Like, what?
We've earned, I honestly think, Jill, that we have earned the right to use this education or whatever else is in life at this age and for where we are.
Which is true.
Use it for how we see it to be used,
It's true.
5 days might be perfect, though. Other people, 3 days is good for us.
Or one, if it's with you.
Or not at all. Or maybe we change our mind right at the last minute.
Yeah, we're not going.
We decide not to go.
I know. That happens a lot. Welcome to my world, everyone. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Let me move on here. Brian E. asks, this is a good question and a longer question. So, still a little confused about options agreements, air quotes. I'm coming to see that part of what is confusing is that different people do it differently, I think.
Ding, ding. There's lots of ways to do an option agreement. Go ahead, Jill.
Brian writes, as I understand, I and the seller agree that I will buy their property with a purchase agreement and an options agreement that stipulates that I have exclusive rights to buy the property for a set period of time. Then I find a buyer who will pay that money plus my money. Once that third-party buyer is secured, he pays that price. After signing a purchase agreement and assignment agreement, I immediately buy the property from the primary seller and then mail both deeds to the county to have one recorded after the other. Either that or have a title company that will handle double closings and do it for me. That is, I buy directly from seller number one and as new owner turn around and sell directly to buyer number three. Only I actually sell it before buying it and as such require the additional options agreement and assignment agreement and thus avoiding acting as an agent for someone else. That's the big important part.
I'm going to talk about that in a minute. You never want to represent somebody ever. And you never even want anyone to have this thought that you're representing them in the purchase or sale of their real estate. That's not legal.
That's the wrong way.
That's what real estate agents licensing is for, and you do not want to cross those people.
Right. And that's okay. Additionally, I could secure a third buyer and before receiving payment, go ahead and buy the property from seller number one. That would seem to undo the need for an assignment agreement because I'm buying before selling. No, I am listed as the buyer in the primary deed and the seller in the second deed, right? The primary seller, obligor.
Somebody went to school.
Yeah, is not mentioned in the deed to the assignee, right?
Okay, so let me paraphrase, if I may, Jill.
Oh, please.
The first way he mentions is the kind of the formal in-school way. You find a guy who wants to sell a piece of dirt for 10 grand. You know it's worth 20. You have him sign an agreement that says that you are going to purchase the property, but you're going to market it and stuff. And when you find a buyer, you're going to do the deal. And he signs it. And he thinks that's a good idea. And so do you. And you go market it, and you find a buyer for $20,000. The $20,000 guy sends you $20,000 or sends the escrow agent $20,000. And you complete two deeds. One deed that conveys the property from the $10,000 guy to you, and one deed that conveys the property from you to the $20,000 guy. And you record them both just seconds apart. You send them both into the same package. That's an option agreement. The second way is what Jill and I do, is you just buy the property. Mm-hmm. There's no option involved at all. Mm-hmm. You know that you're going to sell it for 20 grand. If you don't know you're going to sell a $10,000 piece of property for 20,000, don't buy it. Mm-hmm. Don't option it. Don't horse around. Mm-hmm. So the first way, you need to make sure that it's recorded in your name, even if it's for just seconds. Mm-hmm. Even if you've owned it for just seconds.
That way it proves you're not representing the person.
That's
you're
right.
Not just in the middle there.
That's right.
It doesn't go from A to C, and they don't even know each other. They have, you know,
a lot of places,
or of each other.
Assigning the deal to the actual buyer, you know, and then he pays you, that's where you start to get in a little, it's gray. And there are certain places that really frown on that. So you want to make sure that you are either, you want to avoid it all, get yourself a partner. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the dough, get yourself a partner that understands your business, our business, that says, you know what, I looked at all the data too, and it is worth 20 grand. Let's do this deal. How about I'll give you all the money, buy the property for 10 grand, and when we sell it, I make five and you make five, and we'll call it done. Let's do 50 of those.
I want to back up on the first one, though. It's not, sometimes I think we're creating more work for ourselves. We don't have to make it this difficult. And I've done this many times. This conversation is not hard. Look, Mr. Smith, I'm happy. I would buy your piece of property right now for $5,000. Done deal. I have the acquisition funds. I can pull this trigger. I can do it right now. $10,000 is too much right now. I don't have that much funds, or whatever the reason is that you're not acting on it, kind of thing. I'm not so sure. That's a little higher. But here's what I will do. I'll go out and market the property, see if I can get your $10,000. If I can market it and, get it and, kind of thing. No,
you don't. That's like how you go to prison.
No, but then maybe I'm saying it the wrong way. Maybe. I guess I'm using the wrong terminology here. All right, Jack.
I appreciate your sentiment. I really do, Joe. And it is, we have all done some version of that, but documented that it's not the case. So
I'm using the wrong words.
You want to make sure that you tell the person that you're buying it. You're the buyer. And maybe you might have signed the contract, but mm-hmm. the net effect to them is that, yeah, we're not representing you. You want to make them sign that, too.
Which is true.
We are not representing you in the sale of this property.
All right, I'm using the wrong terms.
Yeah,
never mind.
That's all.
All right.
I really want to clarify this, and I had the producer choose this question intentionally.
Because it is confusing.
It's causing some problems, in a very isolated way. People are really asking, what? What do you mean? And so Jill's right. It's not complicated. But it does have to be documented.
Well, you bring up a whole other point, and this is I see this because I see this in other online communities too, where people don't really understand what the definition of a wholesaler, and they don't understand the definition of this and that and stuff. So the best way is really to keep yourself out of trouble, and like Jack said, buy the dumb thing.
Buy the darn asset.
And if you can't afford it, ask the guy how urgent it is. If it's urgent, go find somebody with the money. Again, this is not hard.
That's really the best
advice.
And then
B, if you can't afford it right now, I mean, there's nothing wrong with telling people, and we have done this, I will have the funds January 15th, because you're going to sell some whatever stuff that's, say you have things going through the works right now.
Right.
If you tell the guy and you can work out an agreement where I can act on this day, does that work for you? Fine. Or say, look, I can afford $5,000 right now or $8,000 in January 15th. Which would you prefer? Let him decide, too.
So put all that aside for a second. The whole point here, forget about legal anything and deal structure. The whole point is for you to be independently wealthy here. So if you know how to buy cheap real estate or undervalued real estate, get yourself a money partner and eat it for a while. Damn, I could have made $10,000 on that deal. I only made $5,000. If I only had the money myself.
Right.
You only have to do that for a while before you start to have your own money. Mm-hmm. And all the while, you're practicing with someone else's dough, by the way. You're going to completely be in total compliance with the law and the local rules, accumulate a bunch of money, eat a bunch of ramen noodles for a year, and then you're in business for the rest of your life. And you don't have to use anybody else's money.
I would like to add, this is more common than people realize. More often than not, when people get into this and they learn about us and they start, sending out mail and getting, they often have more deals than they have money. And it's so great, because I think that's one of the things that people come into this fearful of, oh my gosh, I've been struggling finding deals. Does this really work? And then in 5 minutes, after one mailer, they go, oh, never mind. And they don't say that ever again.
Right.
Next thing you know, they're like, they're in the back of our Land Academy or Land Investors website. We have a back area for just the members. There's so much going on in there. It's only, you have to be a member to get in there. It's called our deal board. And there's so much happening right now, all day, every day. Even on our member call, people are going, I don't have the money to pull the trigger. And three people go, email me. I got mm-hmm. it. We'll make this happen.
I call them lurkers.
Yeah, there's so much. Finding the deals is not hard.
What we're describing.
And if it is, you send out more mail. It's not,
the concept of a 24-month millionaire.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that you should be doing a $10,000 deal anyway, if you don't have the money.
True. Do a $3,000 deal or a $2,000
deal. So do a $3,000 deal because you have the money. Sell it for $6,000. Give the $3,000, put the $3,000 back wherever you got it. Maybe it was your personal savings account. Maybe it was from your mother-in-law. Now you've got $3,000 of profit margin that you made off your mother-in-law's $3,000.
Do it a couple more times.
$3,000 turns to $6,000. $6,000 turns to $12,000. $12,000 turns to $24,000, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Right? And now, am I oversimplifying? Yeah, but some version of that, if you set your mind to it and get it into a calendar, is going to happen.
Yeah.
You will end up with a lot more than $1 million at the end of 24 months. If
Thank
you just roll with it all the way through. So this business of options is just what it is. It's an option for you to buy property, but is it the best option? Sometimes, but not for us. Usually it's not.
Right.
And I'm trying to clarify that really quick, really clearly.
Exactly.
It sounds cool. You know, oh, you don't need any money to be a real estate investor. Yeah, you really don't. But you want to stay in compliance no matter what. And you want to do stuff right. Even if it does, if it means making less money.
Or taking a little more time.
Right.
I'm okay with that too. I tell people all the time, save up, do it right.
Hey, it's all out there. The deals are out there. You just got to get organized and get in front of the right people.
Exactly.
Get in front of the right sellers and get in front of the right money people.
Exactly.
Today's topic, houses versus land. A number of parcels comparison. So what does that mean? This is the meat of the show. In any given county, there's X amount of parcels in an assessor's database. And he really looks at that closely because that's what the treasurer sends tax notices out on every year. So in any given county, there's lots of different types of property. There's vacant land. There's land that's like in between two houses, which is called an infill lot. There's single family houses, like we all know. One piece of property and one house on it. There's attached houses like condos, and that can be set up in all different ways, where there's one assessor's parcel number for 10 properties on one piece of land, one parcel, or they could be separated, depending on where you are in the country. There could be a mobile home park that's got 100 units in it on one parcel where you're renting, or it's got separate APNs. You get my point. And then there's two unit apartments, duplexes, quads, and on and on and on, and then it goes up from there. Jill's falling asleep.
Totally.
There's strip malls, commercial property. You're getting very sleepy.
I am. Nobody's driving at this moment. They're like, wake up, wake up, wake up. Don't have a
Here's
car.
The numbers.
Don't
Here's
fall
the
asleep.
Numbers.
Go ahead.
I got to thinking this because, you know, we always say never just send letters or offers to back tax property. Just send it to everybody.
Right.
So then I start to think, well, how many letters there? How many opportunities are we actually really missing by just sending it to landowners? What if we did send it, took our own advice and expanded to, you know, into houses, which we have been doing for years, but
we don't talk about it. Now we are.
This is how House Academy came about, because I started to run numbers going, oh, wait a minute.
We're going to ramp this up.
Here's the numbers. There's 150 million properties in this country, give or take. There are 90 million houses, single-family residences that are either detached or attached.
Is that included in the 150 million or separate?
There's 90 million of those. And it is included. 90 million of the 150 million, which is almost 62%, are houses. Livable structures on them. That excludes the following: mobile homes, apartments, all of that. It excludes everything. This is just houses and condos.
Okay.
So what does that really mean? Well, let's just use Los Angeles, for example. In Los Angeles, there are, I'm pulling up data while I'm talking.
Mm-hmm.
2.4 million properties, give or take.
LA County.
Almost 1.5 million of those.
2.4 million. That's a lot.
I know.
Which is the biggest? Well, you're going to get to that, I'm sure.
Well, there's 2.4 million in LA County. There are, of those properties, almost 1.5 of them are either houses or condos.
Okay.
That leaves the remainder, the balance of that, is almost 950,000 pieces of property. So there's way more developed addresses and opportunities, let's call them, for us as investors. There are more houses and more condos to flip, for lack of a better description, than pieces of land. Mm-hmm. Think about how successful we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to triple that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point. If you're an experienced land investor, or if you're an experienced home investor, and you want to expand or find a different way, this is perfect for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not selling you anything. I mean, don't do it. I don't care. There are people lined up right now waiting for us to release this Land Academy program.
True.
I'm just being real straight.
The emails that we're getting, I'm like, okay, we're working on it. This is like Land Academy all over again. We're getting there as fast as we can.
Pre-purchase orders, actually. So
yeah.
My point, that's not the point. of this whole topic is not to sell anything. It's to just look at the data, the raw data. Jill, dream up in a county, anywhere, state or county. I did the whole country.
Tarrant County, Texas.
How do you spell it?
T-A-R-R-A-N-T.
There are 644,000 properties there. All types of properties.
Awesome.
400,000 of them are houses. Single family residential or condos. That leaves 248,000 properties left that are actual land. So
what's the percentage there? So what's the number? 2-to-1? 3-to-1?
I didn't calculate it.
Okay.
Either one, it's, I didn't calculate it.
Okay, no, all good. Can I ask you another county when you're ready?
Sure, go ahead.
Dade County. D-A-D-E, Florida. Or Miami. Where Miami is. I'm hitting some of the biggies that I know.
Miami-Dade.
Yep.
570,000 properties total. 350,000 of those are houses, which leaves about 220,000 pieces of land.
Yeah.
So we're missing out by looking down our nose at houses. We're missing way more than 50%. We're missing 60% of the opportunity.
This is phenomenal.
The source of our data is the Census Bureau plus there's some college or university.
Isn't this amazing? So here's one of my takeaways.
I need to properly disclose this. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, here's one of my takeaways right off the bat. Remember when we sat down and decided to do Land Academy, one of the things we talked about, are we shooting ourselves in the foot? Are we giving away our knowledge and our expertise and creating competition? You know, what if, is there enough property? And we both sat down and we had just land numbers that we're looking at right here and said, oh my gosh, no. And we never looked back and we've never had any issues, right? And we're about to add on houses and it's going to be even easier. I mean, really, when you look at the numbers, because the number of properties on the planet for land, we're all just doing just fine over here doing land, no problem. All, you know, we have people all over the world. People, we're all putting food on the table, not a problem. You know, and now we're going to make it, we're now taking this to be what something's potentially even easier because there's more fish in this little pond, you know, properties.
Every retailer you talk to or anybody who, you know, I come from a healthcare background way back. You know, whenever anybody has four or five products that they sell, they all sit around, the owners, at the end of the day, and they say, wow, that product X, it rocks. That product A, whatever.
Right.
But X, if we just had X, if we just could sell X and get rid of A, oh, but we need A because it attracts people to X. Okay, let's keep A. But X rocks. People at Walmart do it. People that place stuff, you know, if you have if you have five apartment buildings, you have an X apartment building that rules and no one ever complains and you just collect a check every month, and you have an A apartment building that you just wish you could kill.
Right.
That's my point here.
Yeah.
Land for us has treated us really well, and it's not past tense. It continues to treat us well. Jill and I just bought a property in Pennsylvania that it has, like, right out of a postcard.
It is. It's pretty.
For $800.
It's really pretty.
It's got two roads on it with a creek running through it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's picture perfect. Anyway, land is great, but why not have a product A and a product X?
Mm-hmm.
We're not losing money.
Exactly.
Let's add some products to it.
Exactly. It's just going to be even easier now.
It's a logical extension.
I love it.
The guy that put these numbers together, his name is John Grumbine, and he creates custom tabulations based on census data, and he put this all together using something called ACS, American Community Survey, from 2014. So it takes 2010 data. The census is every 10 years. The next one is 2020, and then he updates it through that. And he also used something called PUMS, Public Use Microdata Sample, from the U.S. Census Bureau. Is that enough disclosure?
I think it is.
Then
his phone number too.
No, I'm just. And we have no affiliation.
No.
And quite honestly, I took his numbers from there and then went to town. I went nuts on him.
That's cool.
So it's not just his. It was his basic data and the census data. But you see the spreadsheet here, Jill.
Yeah,
I'm not.
I see it.
another county.
Let's see.
How about Maricopa, where Phoenix is?
Okay, that's a good one.
Maricopa, Arizona. 1.6 million properties total.
Wow.
975,000 of those have houses or condos. And the remainder is 600,000.
Based on the numbers you just give me, it sounds like Maricopa County and L.A. County rival each other in size here with the properties. It's staggering that there are that many in Maricopa.
Yeah, L.A. is way bigger.
Is that, 1.5? Yeah,
a million more properties, but it's also bigger, you know, but...
I guess.
Maricopa County is still the Wild West, you know. It's That's just true. Not even close to being subdivided the way L.A. County is.
What about, give me up in Seattle.
Well, let me go to Mojave County for a second, because Jill and I have literally made millions and millions of dollars from Mojave County. It's the example that we use all the time, the standard for land acquisitions and sales. It has been since the 90s for us. We don't do as much there anymore, but every time we use an example in our education program, we use that county. There's 260,000 properties there. Mm-hmm. Which is a drop in the bucket.
Small, exactly.
160,000 of those are houses or condos. Mm-hmm. And 100,000 properties are land.
Isn't that funny?
We have been killing it.
Well, with the 100,000 properties.
How many times can you send the bucket down the well and pull it back up and it's full?
I know.
And then it just keeps getting full.
Exactly.
Now the bucket's going to get that much bigger, or we're going to have three more wells.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
This is awesome.
Have I made my point? Awesome.
Yes, you have.
In a true sense of the word.
I love it. That was good. Thank you for sharing that, Jack.
Well, you've done it again. You've wasted 25 minutes. Listen to the Jack and Jill Show. Join us tomorrow where we discuss ramping up acquisitions for 2018. It's almost that time.
Yay. And we answer your question, should you have one, posted on jackjill.com. Go there and find our online community. It's free.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
Okay, so that wasn't as boring as I thought it was going to be. I'm like, I want to play Guess This County. I want to play like it's like I keep wanting to do more counties and more counties and more. What is Seattle, by the way? Give me another. What is? I don't even know what's county. Seattle, Tacoma, SeaTac. I'm not sure. What is the name of the county?
I'll find it.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a good thing this is the after show.
Exactly. County. King County, Washington. I did not know that.
You're going to have to cover for me here.
I am. That's all good.
Go ahead
dun,
and talk.
Dun, dun,
no,
dun.
No, not
I'm
with
sorry.
That.
Okay. King County. I'm trying to think of another one I want to ask you. I wonder where, it covers, population was 2.1 million in King County.
Seattle, 610,000 properties.
Okay.
This is King County.
Okay.
And 375-ish are houses.
So, based on your numbers there, as you're eyeballing, does it seem like 2-to-1, or is it all over the place?
Well, it's hard to say. So, I've applied a bunch of, like, I've liberally applied assumptions.
Okay.
But my point, and thank you, that's a great, I should have disclosed that in the regular show. The number of properties, the number of parcels is pretty accurate. The number of, I've applied a national statistic based on how many houses and stuff like that to mm-hmm. each market to give you an idea.
Okay.
So yeah, 2-to-1 is a great number.
Okay.
The more urban it is, like LA, the numbers are going to be higher.
Right.
There are going to be more houses.
So it's more than, it might be 3-to-1, which is awesome.
Right.
Or 4-to-1 or
That's
something
right.
ridiculous.
Which works, again, works in our benefit because we usually target more rural counties for land and more urban counties for houses. So it's the best of both worlds statistically.
And
you,
know
you can't
what,
lose
Jack,
here.
I know. Listen to this, too. I mean, how lucky is it for the people in our world because they're going to know how to do both? It's insane.
I totally
There's
agree.
There's no stopping us.
I agree.
Thank you.
After, you know, and then the program after that, you know, probably in 2019 will be all about commercial, which is where I cut my teeth.
This is going to be so fun.
So commercial is a whole different thing, but geez, you can make some dough.
I love it.
My dad retired on one transaction.
Yep.
He bought an office, warehouse, office building.
I bet.
One transaction, the rest of his life.
Jack, you know what's interesting? I bet we have people in our community right now that could do that, but they choose not to.
We have a lot of commercial professional commercial real estate acquisition people that are doing this on the side for themselves. I mean, that's what I did.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know what my point?
Uh-huh.
I can name a few people right now that could be done and out and retired and happy, but they're just like, oh no, now this is fun. It's like, bring it. They could be
retired.
I don't
know what I would do in retirement except this.
I know. Exactly. Oh boy, share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And while you're at it, please rate us there.
We are Jack and Jill.
And
information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.